Numbers chapter 10 from verses 33 to 36, and then Numbers 11, 1 to 3. So let's read that together. Verse 33. So they set out from the mountain of the Lord and traveled for 3 days. The Ark of the Covenant of the Lord went before them during those 3 days to find them a place to rest. The cloud of the Lord was over them by day when they set out from the camp. Whenever the ark set out, Moses said, "Rise up, O Lord, may your enemies be scattered, may your foes flee before you." Whenever it came to rest, he said, "Return, O Lord, to the countless thousands of Israel." Now the people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord, and when he heard them, his anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. When the people cried out to Moses, he prayed to the Lord, and fire died down. So the place was called Taberah, because fire from the Lord had burned among them. Let's open our hearts to hear from the word of the Lord.
Familiar with these four words? Are we there yet? It doesn't have to be a long trip. It could be just a trip to the local supermarket or the local library. But as soon as you're not even out of your subdivision, you hear this mumbling behind you. Are we there yet? Do you have children like that? Maybe. Now, Elaine, remember, maybe she did that herself. How did you react? Greatly annoyed? Turn around and abandon the trip? Maybe that's why so many families never take their children on road trips. Now, we have just begun a series of messages from Numbers. The book of Numbers isn't really about numbers and names and census. Just a little portion of the book is. The book of Numbers is really about the experience of the children of Israel in the wilderness as they journey with God before they were allowed to enter into the land of promise. In fact, that is the way the Hebrew Bible titles this fourth book of the Pentateuch. In Hebrew, it's called Bamidbar. Literally, it means in the desert, in the wilderness. And as we read through the dramatic pages of this book, we see patterns of behavior. We see patterns of behavior that God constantly displays. We also see patterns of behavior that the children of Israel constantly display. And we also see Moses, a pattern of behavior that Moses constantly displays. God constantly displays his grace and patience. And the children of Israel constantly and typically display complaints, ingratitude, rebelliousness. God constantly and typically display his grace and patience, but it does not mean that God is incapable of anger. The Israelites, the children of Israelites, constantly display rebelliousness and complaints and ingratitude. But it doesn't mean that there were no exceptions. In fact, there were two exceptions that we will look at in a few weeks. And Moses constantly display a worthy model for us. But it also does not mean that he was perfect. So this morning, allow me to draw your attention to these patterns of behavior. And toward the end of the passage, we will decide which pattern shall be our model. first, the pattern of behavior that God displays. God typically and constantly display his grace and patience. Look again with me in verse 33. So they set out from the mountain of the Lord and traveled for 3 days. The Ark of the Covenant of the Lord went before them during those days to find them a place to rest. The cloud of the Lord was over them by day and when they set out from the camp. The Ark of the Covenant went before them and the cloud of the Lord was over them. Take a look at the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant is just an appearance. Just a wooden box. God instructed Moses to make when he was on a mount receiving the law. God said, make the chest out of acacia wood, such and such a size, 4 feet by 2 feet by 2 feet, not very big. Smaller than this table. Overlaid it with gold. So in appearance, it's beautiful. Its wood inside is inlay with gold. Cast 4 gold rings on the side and make 2 cherubim and set them on top of the ark. And make 2 poles also out of acacia wood, but inlaid it also with gold. And the 2 poles will go through those 4 rings. And the ark is to be carried only by those 2 poles. Why such meticulous instructions? And why the 2 poles? Because no human hands should ever touch the ark itself. And if anyone intentionally or unintentionally should touch the ark, that person will die. Why? What is the big deal about a wooden box, even though it was inlaid with gold? Such a wooden box is no ordinary box. It's not just any box. Such a wooden box is the very presence of God. In the midst of his people. In the midst of the cherubim is God's glory. We call it the Shekinah glory. And that is the very presence of God. That is the holiness of God. And no human hands can ever touch the ark. For every human hand is tainted with sin. And no man who offends the holiness of God can live. And yet, in the midst of a sinful people. And yet, in the midst of a sinful nation, God says, I am still with you. God says, I am still in your midst. God says, my glory, my presence is with you all through your journey in the wilderness. Now, did the children of Israel deserve God's presence? Have they done anything that God must obligate himself to them? Now, why? I mean, God can just say, go on ahead. I will make sure nobody will touch you. God could have said that. God didn't have to go with them. God said, I will make sure all your journey will be well protected. God says, I can do that without going with you. God could have done that, but God said, no, I'm going to be personally with you. That is grace. Not just the Ark of the Lord, but also the cloud of the Lord. The cloud was first mentioned in Exodus 13. Do you remember the Passover that we looked at last week? Exodus 12. Just after the Exodus. Just after the Passover. I'll read to you. Exodus 13. By day the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so that they could travel by day or night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. God is always in front of them, and also always in the midst of them. Now, Exodus 13, that's immediately following the first Passover. From the very first day they set out from Egypt, from the very moment they left, God's guidance was in front of them, day and night. I used to think that the pillar of fire was only for the nighttime when they rest. And I just remember reading this now. They could travel too if they wanted to at nighttime. The children of Israel did not know their way through the wilderness. How could they? All their lives, for generations, for 430 years, for 20 generations, they were never allowed to leave Egypt. How do they know the way through the wilderness? If it weren't for God guiding them in front, they would have lost any sense of direction as soon as they crossed the Red Sea. And yet, from the first day, even before they reached the Red Sea, God's guidance was with them already. God's presence was with them. God's guidance was with them. That is grace. And we will see in a minute how God displays His grace by limiting His just anger toward the rebellious. God constantly displays a pattern of grace and mercy and patience. And on the other hand, the children of Israel constantly displayed a pattern of ingratitude and rebelliousness, a pattern of griping and complaining, a pattern of whining and longing for the past. Look at verse 1, chapter 11. Now the people complain about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord. Now that's by no means the first time they complain. They have been complaining ever since they left. This is not because they have been traveling for a long time either. The first recording of them complaining was as early as Exodus 15. I'll read to you Exodus 15, 16, 17, and Numbers 11. Exodus 15. They had just crossed the Red Sea. They had witnessed with their own eyes the mighty hands of God turning aside the raging sea. The mighty hand of God carrying them across the dry land. The mighty hand of God wiping out the pursuing Egyptian chariots. That was Exodus 15. That was only 3 days after they crossed the Red Sea. How could they remember? I mean, how could they forget the mighty hand of God during the crossing of the Red Sea? And yet 3 days after that, they were griping and they were complaining and they were whining about water. And again, the next chapter, Exodus 16, just days after complaining about water, on the 15th day of the second month after they came out of Egypt, just 1 month after the Passover, just 1 month after their deliverance, they complained about food. No bread, no meat. That was not all. Another chapter later, Exodus 17, before they even reached Mount Sinai, they grumble again, and this time, I read to you 17:2. This time they were Rephidim. They were again griping about water again. 17, verse 3. They quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." And now, Numbers 11. Here they go again. They were grumbling about hardship. You remember? Water, food, water. And now hardship. Are we there yet? Can you hear that? Day after day, they keep saying the same thing. I mean, you think about how long have they been traveling up to this point? They have not been traveling long. Barely a year. Turn back with me to Numbers 10, 11. Just a few verses before the passage we read. Numbers 10, verse 11. On the 20th day of the second month of the second year, the cloud lifted from above the tabernacle of the testimony. Then the Israelites set out from the desert of Sinai and traveled from place to place until the cloud came to rest in the desert of Paran. It had taken the children of Israel only 2 months after the first Passover to reaching Mount Sinai. That is a very quick trip. Exodus 19 tells us they got to the mountain of the Sinai of the Lord already. 2 months. And they had spent an entire year, just a little bit, about a year, at Sinai, resting waiting for Moses to come back down, waiting for the law. Now the law is given. The ark has been made. The tabernacle has been made. And on the 20th day of the second month of the second year, they move out of Sinai. And here they go again. They started to grumble again. Just 3 days after they set out from Sinai, they complain about their hardship. I mean, what did they expect? Did they expect 5-star hotels waiting for them every night? Spa treatment? I mean, do they expect, you know, their aching feet being massaged? You go to China. You know, $1 US, $2 US. You can have somebody massage your aching feet after a whole day of touring. I mean, what do they expect? 2-star Michelin chef cooking manna for them every night? But the children of Israel said, yes, that's exactly what we expect of God. Because we deserve them. God has been nothing but gracious and patient with them. And the children of Israel has been nothing but ingrates. God says, I've been with you. I have been guiding you. I have been protecting you. And the people says, no, that's not good enough. And the people say, we want to travel first class. We want air-conditioned buses. We want lemonade in every rest stop. We want to get to the promised land, and we want to get there now. Doesn't that sound like children? We want to get there, and we want to get there now. And God constantly and typically display a pattern of grace and mercy. But that does not mean that God is not capable of justified anger. Enough is enough. They've been grumbling about water and food and water and now hardship. Look at me in verse 1 again, chapter 11. God's anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. A God who is not angry is a God who condones sin. A God who is not angry is a God who condones rebellions and ingratitude. A God who doesn't discipline his children is a God who is irresponsible. You look at a child, you look at a 42-year-old man acting like a 4-year-old because he has parents who is irresponsible and who has been condoning him since he was born. A God who is not angry is not a God of justice. If you read the Old Testament carefully, I'm sure you notice these beautiful words repeated again and again. The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. Remember those words? I read them over and over again in the New Testament. Maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin. And yet, he does not leave the guilty unpunished. Slow to anger never means God never displays anger. Slow, forbearing. It takes a lot to provoke God. He may be slow, but he does display anger. Those words first appear in Exodus 34. And if you wish, talk to me later. I'll give you 12 other references. A lot in Psalms, a lot in the prophets. That God is slow to anger and abounding in love. But yet, God will not leave the guilty unpunished. And that is why this cleansing fire burn among the guilty Israelites. That is God's justice displayed. But at the same time, God's pattern of grace and mercy is shown. It is displayed also because God's fire was confined to the outskirts of the camp. And the fire died down as a result of Moses interceding for the people. And this incident was so significant that the place was memorialized with a special name, Taberah. Taberah means burning. It reminds the people that the fire of the Lord burned among them. Now, do you think the children of Israel would have learned the lessons by this? The fire burning was only limited to the outskirts of the camp. No casualties was mentioned. It was a warning, not a display of how severe God's punishment and anger could be. Now, shouldn't the children of Israel get it? No, they didn't. They never did. They never did. As soon as the fire died down, here they go again. Now, we didn't read before. Now, let me ask you to turn your attention to the reading of verse 4 to 6. If you would please. That's verse 4 and to 6, please. Let's read that together, please. The rabble with them began to crave. Yeah, 4 to 6. Yeah, and the fire of the Lord. Okay. Shall we please again? We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost. Also the cucumbers. And the next verse, please, verse 6. But now we have lost our appetite. Don't they sound like little children? You notice, don't you, how rebellions always start? It always starts with only a few rabble rousers, a few discontent, a few instigators, just one voice griping, and then one becomes two, two becomes four becomes eight, and exponentially the whole people joined in. And what are they griping about now? First it was water. They got water. They gripe about food. They got food. They gripe about water again. They got water. They gripe about their hardship. Then God showed them his displeasure. Immediately, they gripe about food again. Would they ever stop griping? Would they ever stop being ingrates? They would never. Sadly, they would not. They will display the same pattern again and again. And now they gripe about manna. It's boring. They are tired of steaming it, stir-frying it, baking it, boiling it, deep-frying it, and now they crave for other foods. They started wailing and whining just like babies. Oh, if only we had meat to eat. Oh, we remember the fish we had in Egypt. Oh, we remember the cucumbers and the leeks and the garlics and the onions. But no, all we got is this manna. What is it anyway? That's literally what manna means. What is it? You know, on a surface, they seem to be just protesting about a boring diet. But there is a much, much deeper offense in it. The deeper offense is one, the children of Israel were yearning for the past that they had just left behind. They wanted to turn back. I don't think they had forgotten the pain and suffering of being slaves. How could they forget? It was only a year ago that they left. How could they have forgotten the bricks and the tunes and the straws, or the lack of straws? How could they have forgotten the whip from the past masters, from the shame and from the deprivation? They did not forget the pain of bondage. It is just that they didn't care. They didn't care. Did they really have fish to eat when they were in Egypt? Did they really have meat to eat when they were injured? Not very likely. Rarely at best. Slaves have no such luxury items and options. They may, once a year perhaps. In light of their present hardship, they were just chasing phantom pleasure that they thought they had in the past. The pain in the past was real. The pleasure of the past was fantasy. When the present journey with God seems so hard and difficult, the children of Israel would much rather go back to the painful past to escape the hardship of the present. Even though it was a journey from Egypt to the land of promise. Even though it was a journey from captivity to freedom. Even though it was a journey from slavery in an alien land to rest in a promised land. The children of Israel prefer regression into captivity again. Do you think that was a wise choice? Of course not. Not only was it a foolish choice, their backward looking was not just a complaint about a monotonous diet. Their complaint about their diet was a rejection of God's blessing and a rejection of God's plan. Verse 10 tells us that the Lord became exceedingly angry. God may be slow to anger. God may be full of compassion. But he can also be exceedingly angry. Rightly so. Justifiably so. Because the children of Israel were rejecting the gracious gift of God. Manna was bread from heaven. Heavenly food, gracious gift from God. It was for their daily sustenance as well as the promise of the blessing and abundance that is to come. It's not only sustenance for today. It is a promise of the abundance and blessings yet to come. And other people, they have spurned God's gracious gift, and they were in fact spurning God. Your food is not good enough for us. And you are not good enough for us. We don't like your food. We don't like your plan. We don't like your provision. We don't like your demands. God, we just don't like you. We will go after other gods. That's what spurning the food really means. The children of Israel will repeat again and again this pattern of behavior for generations and generations. We have seen how God displays a pattern of grace and mercy and patience. We have also seen how the children of Israel constantly and typically display their ingratitude, their grumbling, and their rebelliousness. And now thirdly, let's look at Moses. We will also see a pattern of behavior that is a worthy model for us all. First, Moses constantly displayed his trust in God. Look back with me in verse 35 to 36. We see his pattern of trusting in God. 35 to 36. Whenever the ark set out, Moses said, "Rise up, O Lord. May your enemies be scattered. May your foes flee before you." And whenever it came to rest, he said, "Return, O Lord, to the countless thousands of Israel." Moses knew perfectly well that in front of them, in front of these 2 million children of Israel, were countless enemies. There will be hostile nations that will not allow them to pass. Moses knew very well that Canaan was occupied by powerful, warring people. They have superior weapons. They have impenetrable walled cities, so high and so thick that it was impossible to break down. They have impenetrable defensive positions. Moses knew very well that slaves are children of Israel. They had no military training. They have no military tradition, let alone weapons. You know how they broke down the wall of Jericho? Not by weapons, by trumpets. Maybe it was sound waves. I doubt it. Sound waves may break glass. Thin glass. Wine glass. But not 10 feet thick wall. Rationally, the children of Israel had absolutely no possibility of driving out these hostile nations before them. occupying hostile people, original occupants of kingdom. The only assurance Moses had was God's promise. The only means that Moses had was God's power and might. And all that he could rely on was God's words, God's presence, and God's promise. And so he said to God every morning, I trust in you to go in front of me, to cut a path so that we can go through, because we can't. He said to God every evening, I trust in you to be in our midst, protecting us through the dark. Because if any hostile nations were to attack us, they would have chosen the darkness of the night. I trust in you to be in our midst, to protect us from harm. That's a worthy pattern of trust. Secondly, Moses displayed a pattern of trusting or interceding for God's people. Did the children of Israel annoy Moses? Did they irritate him? I mean, did the children of Israel ever provoke Moses to anger? Did they deserve to be led? Moses never wanted the job at the beginning. Moses took up a path of leadership for one and for one reason only. Because God called him. He had tried to wiggle his way out of it. Oh, he tried. He tried very hard. He tried all kinds of excuses. But God would not let him off the hook. And when Moses broke down his resistance, he obeyed the calling with his whole heart. No matter how provoking the children of Israel were, no matter how intolerable they were, no matter how irritating they were, no matter how annoying they were, Moses would not ever cease to intercede for them. Moses displayed a constant display of interceding for the children of Israel. When the children of Israel worshiped the golden calf, just months after the first Passover, at the foot of Sinai, God was going to destroy them. And God said to Moses, I'm going to make a great nation out of you. And what an offer. How can anybody refuse an offer like that? As Moses said to God, no. Moses interceded for the children of Israel. And here in Numbers 11, the people were griping again about hardship. And the Lord's fire came upon them. And Moses prayed to the Lord, and the fire died down. Four chapters later, we'll look at in another time, Numbers 14. The people refused to enter the promised land because of fear. They were at the very gate of the promised land. Four chapters after this, or three chapters after this, they could have just walked in. All they had to do was trust in God and take possessions of the land. But they refused because of fear. And God's anger was again rekindled and said to Moses, I'll read to you. I will strike them down with a plague and destroy them. And I will make you into a nation greater and stronger than they. What an offer. Moses being the father of Israel. Moses again say no. Instead, he interceded for the people. You see, again and again, we see this pattern. Moses interceding for the people who deserve to be destroyed. Why? To guard the glory of God. Moses' response was, what will other people say about you? You brought them out of Egypt because you cannot, but you cannot finish the job. Moses was protecting and guarding the reputation and the glory of God. That is a worthy pattern to copy. And thirdly, Moses displayed a pattern of trusting in God, calling on God, seeking God with his pain and with his distress. The people rebelled against God and rejected God, who has been so gracious to them. They gripe about everything over and over again. How much more can Moses take? Do you have a breaking point? Moses had a breaking point. when the children, how about when your children gripe and complain every 10 seconds? Are we there yet? I want this, I want that. Don't you have a breaking point? You probably had one and you never had it again because you never took your children anywhere again. Moses had his breaking point, and his breaking point is seen in verse 10 to 15. We didn't read it before. Now, I appreciate it if you would read it. Oh, thank you. Let's read that again, please. This is, well, we didn't read it before. 10 to 15, shall we together? Moses heard the people... Where can I get meat for all these people? They keep wailing to me, give us meat to eat. How can I carry all these people by myself? The burden is too heavy for me. If this is how you are going to treat me, put me to death right now. If I have found favor in your eyes, and do not let me face my own ruin. Do you hear Moses complaining? I hear Moses complaining. God, why have you brought this trouble on me? I mean, what have I done to displease you? Why have you put this burden of all these people on me? Did I conceive them? Did I give them birth? No, why do you tell me to carry them in my arms like a nurse carrying babies? And that's so accurate description. Babies, whining babies. Where can I get meat for 2 million people? I didn't conceive them. I didn't give them birth. In other words, these people were so rebellious, but I did not pass the rebellious genes to them. Moses was complaining. But there's a great difference between the complaints of the children of Israel and Moses' complaint. And the difference is this. Whereas the people complained was a rejection of God, Moses' complaint was a rejection of himself. The people thumbed their noses at God. Your food is not good enough for us. You are not good enough for us. But Moses' complaint was saying, I am not good enough for this job. I am not qualified. The job is too big for me. Look at 14, verse 14 again. I cannot carry these people by myself. The burden is too heavy for me. If this is how you are going to treat me, put me to death right now. If I have found favor in your eyes, do not let me face my own ruin. Moses constantly trusted in God, but his trust is being sorely tried. He turned to God and he sought him with these desperate words. God, I'm handing in my resignation. I want out. Take my life. Give me a merciful death. Let me resign with my death. You know, there's so many people of God worthy to be our model. They all have a death wish. You remember Job? He cursed the day he was born. That means I wish I'd never been born. I wish I were dead. You remember Elijah? He wished he had died. Moses, Job, and Elijah, they are in the same company. In the depth of their pain and exhaustion, they were exhausted. Who isn't tired? They all cry out to God, let me die. And God responded to them all with the same answer. Your resignation is not accepted. Instead, God says, I will reassure you. I will restore you. I will renew you. I will ease your pain, and I will bring an end to your distress. God didn't say that to Job, but God said to Elijah. And God is saying to Moses too. God did that to them. next week, as we will continue in verses 16 to 35, God reassure Moses and relieve him of his heavy burden. But for today, Moses displayed a pattern of seeking God with his pain and exhaustion and burden. Every Christian should take to heart the message of Numbers. It is not an old, irrelevant, disconnected book. It is the most relevant book to us all. For the book of Numbers is just like a mirror. When we look into it, we see ourselves. Every one of us is a traveler. Every one of us is traveling from one point to another. Every one of us is traveling from one place to another. You may be 12 years old. You may be only traveling from 6th grade to 7th grade. You may be traveling from high school to college. You may be traveling from junior high to a regular 4-year higher college. You may be traveling from singlehood to marriage. You may be traveling from 50 years of career to retirement. Whatever stage in life you and I may be, we are all traveling from life on this earth to life in our eternal heavenly home. And there's no difference. There's no difference between Israel's journey with God in the wilderness and our journey with God in the wilderness. All through these 40 years, God's presence, God's glory, God's presence, God's guidance never left the children of Israel. God was indeed slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness to them. And it is the same God. It is the same God who is with us, traveling with us through our life journey. God never promised us our life journey will be easy. God never promised that. God did promise us his abiding presence and guidance. Jesus did promise us that we will live a life and live it abundantly. But abundance of life never means ease of life. Abundance of life means having God's presence, having God's glory, having God's guidance with us as we journey through life's wilderness. As we journey through life's wilderness, we will experience unbearable pressure, as if we were in the furnace of the desert sun. As we journey through life's wilderness, we will experience fear, as if we were in the cold of the desert night. We will find ourselves parched, as we were in the rut of a monotonous landscape. And here's a choice. Here's a choice we are faced with every day. Do we want to live a pattern of griping, grumbling, complaining, moaning? Do we want to live a pattern of rejecting God's plan and rejecting God's abundance gifts? Do we want to live in a pattern of constantly looking back and longing for a phantom fantasy of pleasure in the past that were never real? These are patterns of the children of Israel. And those choices will only test God's patience. God may be slow to anger. God may be abounding in love and compassion. But a pattern of griping, a pattern of rejecting God's grace, a pattern of looking back will surely provoke God's anger. Now, on the contrary, do we want to live a pattern of trust? Every morning, asking God to go ahead of us this very day, pave the way for us to go forward, and every evening, asking God to protect us through the night? Do we want to live a pattern of interceding for people? What a great reminder to me, Moses interceding for people. People who are undeserving. People who are annoying and irritating. Don't you come across people like that every day? People who are provoking. Poor people who are intolerable burden. Still interceding for them. Simply, simply because God has trusted them to your care. Do you want to live a pattern of seeking God and lay it all out before Him with all your distress and burden, crying out to Him, I can't take it anymore? That's honesty. That is honesty. And let God reassure us and restore us and find relief for us. This is the pattern that Moses displayed. You see that the decisions that we make, the choices that we make every day, will make all the difference in a life journey through the wilderness. I used to think that Moses was so distant. I used to think that he was such a superman. I used to think that he was such a superhero. But I come to realize that he was no superman. He was no superhero. He doesn't have a magic cape. He's just so ordinary, just like you and me. Are we there yet? No, we are not there yet. Moses had 39 more years to go after this passage. Oh, he wasn't there yet. Neither are we. But there are much, much more wonders of God's grace ahead in store for us. Let's pray together. Father, we thank you. Thank you for the models before us. Thank you for those who have gone on ahead. They have failed. They were so imperfect. Thank you for you call the imperfect. Thank you for you call the failure. Thank you for you allow us to see that we will just trust in you. That we will just be honest with you. That we will be just intercede for those that we are responsible for. Your presence, your glory, your guidance will never depart from us. Grant us that assurance and reminder so that we may live next day, take the next step with stronger faith and assurance. Father, we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.